This meeting is now being recorded.
Today's subject is how to do our bhakti. How? You see? You said there are nine kinds of ways, kinds of bhakti, or the devotion. Five. Nine kinds. Dhauta means nine. There are nine ways and means to have, to strengthen our bhakti or devotion with God. First of all, we have got your eyes. Through the eyes, that devotion is always developed and strengthened. So when you see the God in man, the God in you, light or sound, or the physical body which radiates that light and sound, when you see Him, eyes are the windows of the soul. We receive impressions from outside, about 80% of this. All impressions which we receive from outside, 80% are received through the eyes. So eyes are the most effective way to develop, to strengthen the devotion in us for Him, whom we love. So just you see, receive impressions, let those impressions embed in your heart and close your eyes. Just look, see, the God in man and the God light and sound, or the light and sound which radiates from the human pole. Just look at it intently, minutely, penetrating, just forgetting everything else. Receive impressions, then close your eyes. Let those impressions be embedded in your heart. You see? Result will be in due course of time, of course, not always. All at once, that will be developing and that devotion will be strengthened from day to day. So much so that you will feel He is in me and I am in Him. You see? This is the true. So, true devotion, true bhakti is developed in this way through the eyes. Well, God radiates through the eyes of this God-man, you see. In your eyes, through your eyes, you see into His eyes. When two eyes and two eyes meet together, and you see and He sees, you see, He just sheds, gives out lyrical glances of His higher divinity through you. You receive it. Receive the impression, close your eyes, and be absorbed in that. In due course, you'll feel, as you think, so you become. This is the best way of strengthening the devotion within you. So there are nine, the one is taken as a bridegroom and a bride. Christ has said, God is our bridegroom, everlasting bridegroom. Worldly bridegrooms are for 100 years at the most. The bridegroom of the soul is God Himself, and all our souls are His virgin girls, you see. So if you want that He should be just what you say, infused in your very life, then receive the impression. This is the most effective way of developing love, or devotion, or strengthening in due course. The first kind is just like a bride and bridegroom. You see, in Christ, Catherine and others, they said, well, I've been just betrothed with Christ. So Catherine used to wear one ring here, you see, in sign of that she's betrothed to Christ. These are some of the examples, you see. So when two become one, outward examples are given just to bring home the truth of it at the back of it, you see. When two unite in the worldly way, they forget everything. They forget their body. They just enjoy that by absorption, soul into soul. They forget all world over. Similarly, when our soul, these impressions and we, those are embedded in our heart. Naturally, in due course of time, patience is necessary, you see. Perseverance is necessary. Then you feel from day to day that He is in me and I am in Him. So Christ, Kabir has given an example. Just, can I just lay down the bed within your eyes and look at Him and absorb your whole, His whole, I mean, radiation what He gives within you and close your eyes with these eyebrows, you see, put these objects outside, curtains, and you be there and you, He be within you. You don't look to anybody and let Him not look to anybody else. You see, these are the examples to show. In this way, you will please the Lord, and Lord will be pleased with you. These are one way. When you receive impression with this, your natural, your heart will be just overflowed with this devotion and love. What will give you? You'll always thinking of Him. And when you meet others, you're speaking of the Lord, of the bridegroom, just like outward way, those who are newly married, they sit down, brides together, and talk about the husband, you see. Just like those are on the way back to God. They receive those impressions within themselves. They always, when two meet, they think of God or God in them. And that devotion still further overflows, you see, becomes stronger and stronger and so much so that by radiation you are overflowed with that love divine, you see. This is the one way how we should be devotion. There are other ways that we are speaking before. So today's subject is how to do devotion to the Lord. One way is like that. Receive in the old days, there are some, in the original time and in the time of Swami, if they are there, people used to look into the eye of the Master. They said that they would look into it. For a few minutes, they would receive impression. This is the strongest way to receive the radiation of the Master. Once I was just talking, my Master used to, when I used to go, he would always sit by me, give talk. I used to talk to Him and the people enjoyed. So I was just explaining that in old times, Masters allowed the disciples to just make them sit before them and look into His eyes. Eyes are the windows of the soul. It is God within Him that looks to you. And when you are receptive, you see all those impressions. This is, the, I think, the best way out. Then the time came out further, you see. Without Arjuna, he would not allow to go to His all right. He would say, oh, what is life? Look at me. So one of the disciples was sitting there, he cried, Master, why don't you allow us to do that? You see? So this is one of the nine forms of the devotion or bhakti, which is the most effective, I would say. Naturally, when you that embedded in your heart, out of the abundance of heart a man speaks. Natural. You're always singing praises of the God, God in there. When two men of the disciples will sit together, they're always talking of God. When more than one sits together, the devotion to the Godman or Guru Bhakti is strengthened. You follow me now? How these things are done. These are not given in talks, I tell you. These are practical things which are given in the morning, every day. So these are the way those who follow that way. Naturally, when that is embedded in your heart, you will speak out of the abundance of your heart. When two will meet, he will be remembered, not to whom you talk. And two girls, newly married, they all talk of the bridegroom, you see. Similarly, when two disciples devoted to the Master, the God is man of God, when they sit, they always think of the Master or God. naturally, how the love is radiated between two disciples. When they speak of their bridegroom, how nearer at heart you feel to each other. Similarly, when you speak of God, those who are on the way to that, they learn more love. You see? That is such a relation which cannot be broken even after death. So God unites us, God man unites us in a relation which continues even after leaving the body. Our Master used to say, well, some are going across the river, some have reached before, the others are falling, but all will be together at the other side. Those who are initiated on the way back to God, they are all to go there, but who will go? Will do bhakti in this way. These are things to just judge where we stand. To highest aim to have in human life, you see, is to know God. If I know God unless you know yourself, unless you have been drawn from all, the example is just given. You are cut off from outside. Yeah, see, that's the most effective way, I would say, tell you. That's the bread of life, what Kash said. I am the bread of life. This is bread of life has come down from heaven. Those who partake of it shall have everlasting life. It's not the outer bread of life, it is bread. It is bread of life. Which you get by looking through the windows of the soul, I would say, just into the window in which that Master, God in man, is radiating his love. This is most effective. This is only expressed in words. You really get bread of life. That's the most effective way. This is one of it. Not even that is there. You enjoy those who are on the way. You talk, oh, Master is like that, Master is like, God is like that. You dwell more. And all of you singing praises of Him, the God in Him. This is one way, in which our devotion is dwelt and is strengthened also. But time factor is necessary, patience is necessary. Perseverance is necessary. Not in one day, 2 days you find it. You forget who you are. It is I, no more I. It is He who dwells in my heart. Then the criteria remains, just put the same question to the Master and also to the one disciple who is just in tune with the Master. If you put in the same question, the same words will come out from the Master as you will ask from the disciple. Exactly the same words. The same words when Master speaks of such a disciple, when he may be hundreds of miles away, he will feel radiation while they are destitute. He should become receptive. And that's the most effective. What I learned, I tell you, from my Master, I'll simply look at it. I question all through life, 2 or 3 questions I put in. No more. So what is He? He comes with you. And God is in Him and the God comes within you. That's all. Very simple, there's no philosophy required. You learn by radiation more, thousands of times more than you have through practice. And your practice, you see, fruitful, becomes fruitful when you do that. For a while you see, you sit, you have withdrawn and gone, going. All foreign thoughts won't interfere. This is one way of bhakti. This is there are 9 ways. 2, 3 comes that way. One like that, then what is within you, you speak of that, naturally out of the abundance of outer man speak. And whenever 2 of the same, on the same way together, they overflow with us. For God, not for love with each other. That is but natural. So God in man unites us in such a relation which never what you say, broken, even after leaving the body. We are all only one way to make. Understand? So we have to just judge how far we are going. There is no question of high or low, you see, rich or poor. Who have done this? तो आपको मालूम हो गया भक्ति किस तरह करनी चाहिए. एक मिसाल आपको दी गई, रोज रोज देखो क्या है भाई. फिर ऐसे आई एम टॉकिंग जस्ट अबाउट डिवोशन. यू सी हाउ दैट डिवोशन इज डिवेल्प, व्हाट इज मेंट बाय डिवोशन. अवर हार्ट, इट इज ए सब्जेक्ट ऑफ हार्ट, नॉट ऑफ हेड. It is a subject of heart, not of head. Heart always means to be attached somewhere. You might call it mind or heart, anything you like. This will be attached somewhere. Now we are attached to the world, to these families, to the outward things. How that attachment has been developed? By constant contact with them. The more we are in contact with outer things, the more attached we are there. This is but natural. The mother brings up her child, you see, looking after the child on him. The child goes away outside, say for 3, 4, 5 hours, she does not turn off, her heart is upset. Why? That heart has been attached to the child because she was all along seeing, coming in contact with the child. Now the hearts are attached to the physical body, to the outward attachments. Naturally, Surdas says, well, my feet go ahead and my heart goes back to it, it is attached. So, bhakti is a subject of heart, not of head, first of all. We have to develop now attachment with God. Now we are attached with the world. All these outer things are ephemeral, changing panorama. The heart which is attached to the outer panorama, how can that sometimes always be changing? This is one thing. So naturally, which is not unchangeable permanence, how can that be attached to that? So first we have to develop attachment. We have to just change from the outside with the God within you. The first and foremost thing, ABC starts by coming in contact constantly, more often, with whom you want to develop your attachment. For that purpose, the first step of any religion is there. Go to the church, say prayers, morning, evening, at night. Even in all religions, you see, Sikhs go to temples, Hindus go to the Hindu temples, Mohammedans go to the mosques. For 3 times they go, 5 times, you see. So this is the ABC, starts from here. So that we must find out sometime, just directing our heart to that way. So the more is it, more often we are attached there, the natural attachment will develop that side. However, this is the first step. Sometimes we leave off all outer regularities. So for that very purpose, this diary has been introduced. For the sake of the one whom you are devoted fully, you see, heart is attached there. For his sake, you love all others who are attached to him, who are created by him, you might say. In that way, there is no binding on you, because you have got the ruling passion, for one. For his sake, we love everybody, his children, his daughter. You follow now how the devotion is dwelt, how to take it out from one place and attach to the other. So first is the most constant attachment, come in contact with the thing, with the person, or with God. That will, the attachment will develop. When it is developed, then you become helpless, you see. Because your heart is attached. You might be going this way and heart is attached somewhere else. You will always be dragged there, you see. So this is the first thought of devotion or bhakti. Diary is proposed, how many times you put it, how many places, in how many places your heart is attached to outer things, in form, one form or the other. That requires purity of heart. Purity of heart, what does it mean? Wherein no other thought strikes other than whom you love, that's all. Purity means that. If it's all, when there's no other thought just in your heart for anybody else, that's all vacant from the outward attachment, then God is there. You see? So devotion starts, you have to just detach your heart from the outer things to the God, or God in man. How that is dwelt? By constant coming in contact. First, ABC starts regularity of your devotion, of your practices, of your attending your churches or sacred places. For what for? Just to think of the Lord for a time, isn't it? Or what else? You go to holy place, to a temple, your heart is attached outside. What's the good of it? He said there are two friends. One, he was very fond of going for playing in the ground. The other said, I will go to the church. Though both of them were headstrong in their own way. The one who thought of the field, playing in the field, he went away there. And the one who went to the very much, he was not in his own way, he went to the church. But while both of them there, what were doing? The man playing in the ground was thinking, my friend is in the church, he must be saying prayers. You see? Though his physical body is there, but all the heart is there. And the one who was in the church, you are thinking, my friend must be kicking balls now. Although physically he is there, but he is not there. You follow? So do all your works, physical, outer attachments, for the sake of one, love everybody. When your heart is too attached to one. Sometimes people come to some holy place, to holy man too. There also they are attached somewhere else. They are thinking of the outside. What good of being there? It is better to be in the field than thinking of the church, you see, than to be in the church and thinking of the field. So this attachment is a subject of the heart. This dwells devotion, as I told you in due course. That is why this is first of necessity. What we do generally, we take up something and leave off the other things. There, all the same, we leaving off the outer way, outer method by which our heart can be tied that way, directed that way. We leave off that thing. And we don't put it whole time the other way naturally. We are lost both ways. How the devotion is developed, this is the first thing. To be in contact with the object with whom you want to be attached. One thing, decide for you. Pity it is. We are adrift. We have not decided our goal, what we want to do. That is why I always stress, well, decide what you want to become. Sometimes we are devoted to one thing for 10 days or a month or 2 months, then we are just at change our direction to some other thing. The result is, you see, the time we just we dig up wells, some 2 feet, some 3 feet, some 5 feet deep, and water is nowhere. You follow? So first decide what you want to become, to whom you want to be devoted wholly and solely. And naturally, you have read scriptures, all masters say, when you got a man body, the highest thing you have to attach yourself to God. Wherever you will be attached, you will go there. Into the world, that is the reason why I have been coming to the world again and again. The reason is because we are not attached to God. Other we would have gone to God. So this is your first thing. Keep your diaries. Eliminate all foreign thoughts from your heart. Our heart is divided. Let it be all. No other thought except to whom you want to be devoted. Scientifically, I am speaking. You will learn devotion. When devotion will set in, you see, you become helpless. You cannot do otherwise, you see. Suppose you are daily saying prayers at a limited method, certain appointed hour. For a month, 2, 3, 4 months. One day you have no time to reach your whole. Day your heart is upset. You lost something. You feel like that. Rich hold, attached with something, you know. This is how this is developed. And second is, just have the company of somebody who's out or devoted. Where you are attached. If you want to be devoted to God, you must be have such company who are devoted to God. You want to be devoted to the world, all right, have you, that you have got ample. Everywhere you find like that. And the third, most effective way is to come in contact where that devotion is what is manifested fully. Where world is made flesh. Where world, W-O-R-L-D, L has been eliminated. L has been eliminated. What remains? World. God, you know. This is how this radiation comes direct to and thousands of miles to only. You are situated at a place which is thousands of miles away from you. You must dwell receptively, direction. From radios and televisions, you hear the voice, you see who is speaking for thousands of miles. Or a God or God man is made world made flesh. He's everywhere. Simply you have to turn your minds, hearts that way. To dwell receptively, you will have help from there. But all the same, to come in contact physically, that cannot be underrated. There you come directly to fire. There you have to direct your attention there. Here you have little or no effort to make to direct your attention. You see with your own eyes. You see? You follow me how the devotion is dwelt, how that can be strengthened, how you can transmute yourself in devotion, sister. So now we should judge where we stand. If our heart is devoted to one, for the sake of the one we are devoted, selfless service we are doing, that is not binding, mind that. You are not devoted to someone, we are devoted for the outer name, fame, for the good name of the world, in the world, this and that, in outer purposes, then you are nowhere. You will go where you are attached. This is the devotion. Masters have been explaining these things in their own way. The basic thing is that you find all masters saying, scriptures speak of the same thing. They say something, but practically you have gone through it. You find now how the devotion is dwelt. For that purpose you have got regularity. Keep your diet. That would make you regular. I always enjoin, send your diary blank. How long you will send it? 1 month, 2 months. Then you will morally feel. You will begin to do something. Then you will be regular. You all right, please put in more time.
Well, good morning and welcome to the satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The talk you just heard was from the Morning Talks CD number 5, How to Do Our Bhakti and How to Develop Devotion. A quick reminder, next Sunday morning we will begin Daylight Savings Time. Be sure to turn your clocks ahead 1 hour before you go to sleep next Saturday night. Our reader this morning is Helen von Aldenbrook. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning.
Go ahead whenever you're ready.
All right. Today I'll be reading from the book God-Man by Master, beginning with chapter 1. Chapter 1, Guru, what he is. 'Tis much that man was made like God before, but that God should be made like man, much more. God clothed himself in vile man's flesh, so he might be weak enough to suffer woe, was a poem by John Donne. It is well nigh impossible to know the Master and to understand his greatness. We have not the eyes wherewith we may behold his reality. A prophet alone can know a prophet. We, the embodied spirits, living on the plane of the senses, simply cannot know him. What thou art, we know not. What is most like thee? Again, how can the lesser, the greater comprehend? Or finite reason reach infinity? For what should fathom God were more than he? In Japji, the daily morning prayer of the Sikhs, it is mentioned, unless one rises to his level, one cannot know of him, God. A master soul may be likened to a skylark, which is described as ethereal minstrel, pilgrim of the sky. He who can soar as high as a skylark and follow her course may know something of the ethereal pilgrim, but poor crows and doves cannot. The master is, however, not a pilgrim of the sky, but a denizen of the highest spiritual realm, and he comes down to sing to us the ethereal song and to take us along with him to his heavenly abode, while on earth he is type of the wise who soar but never roam, true to the kindred points of heaven and home. He is far beyond the limitations of the three bodies, physical, astral, and causal. Of the three innate, natural, and native propensities or instincts, sattva, rajas, and tamas, such as of righteous actions, worldly actions, and inertia or inaction, or actions born of ignorance and darkness. Of the five elements of which the entire creation is made, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and of the 25 prakritis, subtle forms of varying degrees, of which the elements are compounded, and also of mind and matter. Shamasi Tabriz therefore describes him as he is a lark that lays a golden egg. That is, an egg that shines like solid gold, the reference being to the light of the Nam, or word, that is bestowed on each individual at the time of his initiation. He rides the high heavens every morning when he races He covers all the solar systems. And when he goes to bed, he makes pillows of the sun and the moon. In other words, when he is not engaged in any worldly pursuits, he crosses over into the higher regions for rest. O Shemaz Etabriz, by just one kindly look, he can give sight to thousands of stark blind, such as making them seers and prophets. Such master souls are in fact one with God, but come down into the material world at his behest to fulfill his divine purpose out of compassion for the world-weary souls, thirsty and hungry, moaning for reunion with the beloved. God has to make provision for their homecoming. As man alone can be a teacher of man, God has to send forth his elect with a direct commission to lead back those who will listen to God's message. He works as a means to an end. Standing on the top of a hill, as it were, he can locate the smoldering fires of love in the various human hearts, and like a great and powerful magnet or lodestar, he draws all such individual souls as come into his sphere of influence, and by personal instruction and guidance works out the divine mission. Each soul gains in spiritual grace in proportion to her receptivity. The more a person develops this receptivity, the more he experiences grace and spiritual benefit. Gifted with a limitless spiritual wealth, he generously bestows it on all who aspire for it. Each gets according to his need and capability, and gradually develops the seed sown in him. Sheikh Mu'in Uddin says, they, the master souls, live in the world, but their spirit is ever in the high heavens, imprisoned in the tentacles of the body. Their spirit soars high above. Maulana Rumi also says, never take a God-man at a human level, for he is much more than he seems. Apparently, and in generalities, all men look alike, though each differs from the other in inner development. It is this background that helps each individual on the spiritual path and determines the measure of every step he takes, and consequently, each one has his own time factor. A master soul in human form cannot be rightly comprehended. He is a limitless ocean of sat or truth, ever the same from the beginning of creation and from age to age. As it is not possible to do justice to God's greatness, so we cannot do justice to God's elect. A Persian saint tells us, he is beyond comprehension, apprehension, conception, and even conjecture. He outstrips the faculties of sight, hearing, and understanding. All the glories that one can sing of him all his life cannot do any justice to him. Again, if all the mountains were pounded into ink and mixed with the waters of the oceans, and the whole earth were a sheet of paper, one cannot record the greatness of a guru or master. He is the king of spirituality, and we, groveling like insects in the muck of the world, cannot know him and his greatness. Maulana Rumi says, if I were to sing praises of his countless blessings till eternity, I can hardly say anything of them. Whatever we say of him, we perforce do so at an intellectual level, which has a very narrow and limited scope. All our efforts in this direction are bound to discredit him rather than to give him any credit. Guru Arjan therefore says, "Thou art a king, and I address thee as an elder man. Far from doing any honor to thee, I bring thee discredit." The highest and subtlest intellect attempting to describe him is just like a toddler standing before his mother and saying, "Oh, darling, I know you." How much can he know of his parent when he does not know anything of himself? His sweet, lisping words cannot do any justice to the deep motherly love and affection that lies in her bosom. We too cannot sing the glories of the Master, for we cannot know at the bar of the intellect him who is beyond all barriers and limitations. Blessed indeed are we, for Master souls, as and when they do appear, at times tell us of themselves. It is from their rare utterances that we can know something of their greatness and of the potential power that works through them. In innumerable little ways, in parables and otherwise, they tell us of what they are, what is their mission, from where they come, and how they carry out God's plan. It would be advisable for us to go to them and listen to what they have to say about themselves. Chapter 2. The Guru is Shabd. Master is word personified. The Gospel of John begins with the memorable words, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God." That's from John 1st chapter 2. Guru is Shabd, or Word personified. The Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, says the Gospel. Shabd, or Word, is just a ray from God, or the great ocean of consciousness. And this one ray is responsible for the creation and sustenance of all the planes comprising the universe. In the Gospel of John, we read further, "All things were made by him, such as the Word, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men, and the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not." John, chapter 2. Dryden, in his poetic fantasy, refers to it as harmony, or sound principle. From harmony, from heavenly harmony, this universal frame began. Through all the compass of the notes it ran, the diapason closing full in man. In Gurbani we have, "Word is the master, and spirit is a disciple of Word. Word is the master and the prophet, full of wisdom, deep and profound. Without Word, the world cannot exist. Without Word and the master, there is no distinction between them. Word indeed is the elixir of life, and whosoever follows the Word according to the instructions of a living master safely crosses the ocean of life. Tulsi Sahib says, "Spirit is a disciple and Word is the Master. It is only after the Master is linked with the Word that she finds the way Godward by rising into the beyond and entering into the inverted well." Bhai Gurdas speaks of spirit as, "It is only after the spirit faithfully and conscientiously accepts the sound current or the word as master that she becomes a Guru Mukh and knows that the word and the master are in fact one." Sant Kabir likewise thus explains, "Where is the master and where does the spirit dwell? How can the two unite? For without union, spirit has no rest." He himself then answers, "Master is in the Gagan, and so is the seat of the spirit. When the two are united, there is no separation thereafter. Accept the word as master. All the rest is sham and tinsel. Each, selflessly engaged, wanders from place to place. Thus word or shabd is a world teacher from the beginning of time. Blessed are the pure in heart, for in them the word of the master manifests itself. This word is the real saint and can act as a living guide. It is God in action and is expressed in abundance in master souls who are one with God. When I turned the sea of body, a strange phenomenon came to light. God was identified in master, and no distinction could Nanak find. He who is a doer of the word is called a saint or a master soul. This truth dawns only when one studies the significance of the term guru. It is derived from the Sanskrit root giri, which means one who calls. Thus he who always hears this call within himself and is devotedly attached to the call and can make it manifest in others is described in Gurbani as guru. Accept as master one who can make truth manifest. Give expression to the inexpressionable by means of sound. Again, O Nanak, verily, truth alone is true. Kabir Sahib says, "We do obeisance to all teachers, whatever their creed, but the adept in sound principle is greatest indeed." Again, teachers are of degrees vast in variation, but the one of sound current is for highest adoration. Tulsi Sahib also exhorts, "He who can reveal sound current is verily a saint. By analysis of self, one locates the sound within." Kabir Sahib has challenged that whoever calls himself a Satguru or a saint should enable us to see the unmanifest manifested. In Sar Bhaktan we have, "Master brings the message of sound. He serves nothing but the sound. Perfect master is ever engaged in sound. Be thou the dust of the feet of the master of sound." Satguru is a veritable Veda. He is endowed with such nam and thus possesses the elixir of life. He distributes shabd, which works as an open sesame to the heavenly regions and grants free access to pilgrims on the master's path. The theosophists call it the voice of the silence. It reverberates, and its reverberations can be heard from plane to plane. In the terminology of masters, a real saint is one who can teach of Shabd. Without an adept, no one can have the gift of Shabd or Nam. It may be likened to a rope ladder leading directly to God, and a spirit, by taking hold of it, can easily ascend Godward. Contact with Shabd is contact with God, and blessed is one who contacts Shabd within. Again, God and Guru distributes Shabd. By contact with truth, one merges in truth. And again, O Nanak, all saints from the beginning are embedded in Shabd. Blessed is Master Ram Dass, who too has contacted Shabd. In the Holy Bible, we have, the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. It is from an adept in Shabd that one gets a true life impulse. He himself is one with that true life current, from which everything animate derives life. He is a resident of the egoless region. He is Shabd personified. He lives and has his very being in Shabd, having crossed far beyond the sway of Kal or time. He lives life everlasting and is competent to pass it on to others who contact him and follow his instructions. The human spirit at present lies buried under an immense load of mayaic or material pressure. It does not even know that it is spirit. Excuse me just a moment. Thank you. The human spirit at present lies buried under an immense load of mayic or material pressure. It does not even know that it is spirit. It can be awakened to reality and made aware of its greatness only by means of Shabd. This life principle of Shabd already lies in each one of us, but only in a latent form. It has to be made patent or audible to the spirit, so that it may by sheer affinity grow conscious of its rich spiritual heritage and claim it as its own. This contact of spirit with Shabd can be brought about and is firmly established by the master, who is Shabd personified, and no one else can do it. Shabd is a sacred trust with the master and is scrupulously discharged. Shabd of the Master, a Master alone can manifest, and none else is competent to do so. It means that Shabd, or Word, is under the control of the Master. He alone can manifest it, or make it audible, by pulling the spirit out of the physical sensory organs. This contact with Shabd comes as a gracious gift from the Master. No amount of meritorious deeds performed within the limitations of time, space, and causation can merit such a priceless gift, so vast and so limitless as Shabd. All our righteousness are as filthy rags. And again, by works of the law shall no flesh be justified. The Master may grant the gift of Shabd out of extreme compassion and grace, if he so wills. The moment a helpless child tries to pull himself toward his mother, she fondly runs toward him, tenderly picks him up, and lovingly hugs him to her bosom. It cannot be had by endeavors nor by service. It may come when fully reposed, without clutching. Out of the great grace of the Lord, one takes to the instructions of the Master. It does not mean that a person should not try to exert himself. He must, on the contrary, work zealously according to the Master's instructions. The success, however, depends on the will of the Master alone, for he is the sole arbiter of the manner and measure of his grace. Christ said, "If you love me, keep my commandments." To mold one's life in terms of the Master is a necessity on the path of the Master. He who verily follows the Master is ever engaged in hearing the divine music. As the Nam develops, one gets absorbed in it. Though this Anhad Bani, ceaseless sound current, or Nam, word, is the life of our life, yet we cannot make it manifest or audible by ourselves. An approach to it is always through a master saint. Ceaseless sound is a treasure within, with an approach through a saint. Without a master, even us sadhaks have failed to get Nam. Shabd is the mainstay of saints as well as of all living creatures, the difference being that of ignorance of the other. While the former has not an experience of sonship, but truly live in that relationship, the latter have no idea of it at all. Christ said, "I am the Son of God. I and my Father are one. Whatever comes from me comes from my Father." In Gurbani, we also have similar references. God does what his saints wish for, what they, the saints, desire that comes to pass. None can deny their wishes. Father and son are dyed in the same color. Maulana Rumi tells us, "A God-man is competent enough even to divert a bolt from above." It does not mean that saints in any way question the authority of God or run a parallel administration of their own. Far from this, they act as agents and hold his commission. In the world, God acts through them. Egoless as they are, they become fitting instruments of godly powers. Allied closely with Shabd, they receive from and transmit directly messages to God, and in relation to the world, they are just polarized God. The Father and the Son are one and administer the same law. O Paltu, in the domain of God, there is no other manager than a saint. The two are so closely and indissolubly knit together that the saint appears to be running the whole show. Maulana Rumi speaks of it in this wise. Aliyah, or God-men, are the chosen of God. They have full knowledge of all that is visible and invisible. Again, God speaks through saints. "O Lalo, I simply speak out what God makes me speak," said Nanak. Sadh is the mouthpiece of God. In the garb of man, God comes into the world for the sake of suffering humanity, and through his saving grace, he takes upon himself vicarious responsibilities for their shortcomings. See God descending in thy human frame, the offended suffering in the offender's name. All thy misdeeds to him imputed see, and all his righteousness dissolved on thee. A living master is the only hope for the erring mankind, a kindly light to guide their faltering footsteps, and a savior for the sinful. With the help of limited Nam or Shabd, or the embodied spirits, to carry safely over the ocean of life and gain life eternal. Inwardly linked and embedded in Shabd, outwardly he works like a teacher or a guru and gives spiritual instructions to aspirants on the physical plane, and then passes on at will to the subtle and the causal planes and beyond as a jiva progresses on the spiritual path and guides him at every step. He does not stop until he leaves the sadhak in his native home from where Shabd originates, and which, in fact, he is. One who has known Sat Purush, or the primal cause, is a Satguru, or master of truth. He is beyond the sway, both of dissolution, Kal or time, and of grand dissolution, Mahakal or greater time, and is competent to lead the aspirants to this stage. A master of this caliber alone can save the jivas, and nobody else can. He who is one with truth is the master of truth. He can liberate spirits, and Nanak sings his praises. More safe and much more modest, 'tis to say, God would not leave mankind without a way. Thank you, Master, for the great blessings of your words, the holy Naam, and your loving and compassionate eternal grace. Thank you.
And thank you, Helen, for reading for us. Would you tell us again what you were reading this morning?
Yes, it's from the book God-Man, and the chapter, it's chapter one and two, both.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I'll repeat the reminder that I gave earlier about next Sunday morning. We will begin daylight savings time, and I want to tell everyone to be sure to turn your clocks ahead 1 hour before you go to sleep next Saturday night. We had 79 callers at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now, please hang up your phones.